Hello and welcome to another episode of the Laura Sanso podcast with your host, Laura Sanso. Everyone's perception of the world is different based on their model of the world, and her goal is to celebrate that by building the most inclusive self-development podcast. Laura and her guests share their stories and share invaluable strategies from the world of science, spirituality, business, health, personal relationships, and everything in between. We cover it all. Get inspired, learn to welcome adversity, understand that failure is only feedback, and get ready to hear discussion on some of the most important issues facing us today. Enjoy the episode. Hi, everyone, and welcome to this episode of the Laura Sanso podcast. Today, we are looking at the world through the eyes of Dr. Christy Sumner. In 2013, Christy and her soul sisters, Paranorma, which is an all-female paranormal investigation team that travels to some of the most historic and reportedly haunted locations in the U.S. I'm going to ask you if you have any plans to expand it as well, to document the history, legends, and lore of these locations, as well as detail any unexplained phenomena that they encounter. So welcome, Christy. I'm super excited for this conversation. How are you?
I'm well, Laura. How are you today?
I'm really well. I love your accent as well. Our first episode we had on Australian.
Oh, I like Australians as well. They have a great accent.
You have a great accent as well. Just want to correct a paranormal. So I wanted to ask, so growing up, did you think to yourself, when I'm older, I want to lead paranormal investigations?
No, not really. my sisters and I, we've always had a fascination with the paranormal. And we grew up watching some of the popular television shows of the early 2000s, late 1990s, Ghost Hunters, Ghost Adventures and such. And we always said to ourselves, if we had the opportunity to go on a paranormal investigation one day, we would jump at that chance. And that opportunity presented itself in 2013. When we went to Moundsville, West Virginia, which is where the West Virginia State Penitentiary is located. And we were really just there on a girls' trip. It was just something that my sisters and I, we routinely did, met up in different parts of the country to have a cool weekend, just do something unique. And we had a family friend that sat on the board of that facility. And he said, while you're here, why don't you take one of your nights and stay in the penitentiary and see if you can connect with our resident spirits? And we did. And we walked away from that experience with what we felt was compelling, unexplained evidence, such as footsteps, men speaking in the darkness when there was no men around, doors slamming and such. So after that, we really just said, let's do this. We created Soul Sisters Paranormal, and we wanted to, as best we could, elevate this subculture of paranormal investigations into a more mainstream conversation. And that's kind of what we aspired to do through the years.
So what triggered him to say that to you guys, in the sense, do you want to stay and correspond with the spirits per se? Was it just the interest that you had leading up to that?
It really was. Obviously death is something that we're all going to experience.
Yeah.
And it's one of those things where we want to know what is causing these quote unquote paranormal experiences. And so we all come up from a research minded background. So what we wanted to do was really go in and not just have an experience to have an experience, but do a couple of things. One, have a connection with these historical places. And by that, I mean, have a very tactile, physical experience where we can touch the doorknob of a murder house or walk the cell blocks of a penitentiary. So that was the first thing that we wanted to do, and really tell that historical narrative of those locations. And then the second one was really control for environmental factors as best as we could. And then what we would be left with would be the unexplainable. So for example, if I'm on all-female team and we catch a man talking or a child talking, that to me is unexplainable. I have no response to that because we've controlled for everything. We know there's no children on the property or men on the property. And so that to me is unexplainable. I have no logical explanation as to why I'm capturing these voices. And so we really wanted to kind of take it into more of a research-minded situation rather than just going in and having a quote unquote jump scare on a Friday night. That's not what we wanted to do. So that really has propelled us to really put together the documentaries that we put together and explain it in a way that if you don't have an understanding of paranormal investigations and your only point of reference is a media show, we're trying to show you it's a little bit different than that, right? It's not a sensationalism type of a situation. It's something that is more controlled and research minded.
Yeah, and I actually want to compliment you on that, because from the videos I saw, the focus that you put on the actual landmarks and the history, and it's impressive, right? Because it's not just a matter of just going in and saying, this is, what is happening. You give a lot of history of it. Which, why was that important for you?
It was important because, first of all, historic preservation is something that we're very passionate about. And if we don't preserve these locations, then for the next generation, they're not going to be there.
Right.
So just telling the historical narrative of these places that some people might not get a chance to visit or see or even know about was extremely important. It really is our driving factor. And then if you look at the history, then you can start to understand why there could be reports of paranormal there, right? If you just go into a location and say, oh, this is a murder house, let's look and see if we have the spirits here. We wanted to show you what led to it becoming a murder house. You know, what were the circumstances behind this? And so, for example, the Ma Barker house in Central Florida, you know, it's a very nondescript house that happened to be rented by two members of the Barker Carpus gang in 1934. And it was in 1935 where they had this shootout. And So unless you knew that background as to why they were in that house, you're not going to understand the shootout and you're not going to understand the reports of the hauntings behind that location. So for us, the history is extremely important. And then you can start to see, okay, there's a logical reason why this place has a report of paranormal activity.
And how do you source your locations? Is it just from interest?
A little bit of interest, absolutely. So, you know, we find these locations that to us are fascinating. In a lot of instances, we'll get called. A location will call us and say, hey, you know, I see what you're doing. I like your style. Would you like to come and investigate this location? And so it's a combination of both us doing research and wanting to actually go there or to another individual calling us and asking us to.
There's one thing that stood out to me. One of the videos I watched, you were speaking to spirit. I'm saying that correctly, right?
Yeah.
You were speaking to a spirit and it was a male spirit. And you asked the spirit if you wanted to speak to a man, or would he be more comfortable with a man or something or such. It was something along those lines.
Mm-hmm.
So do you find that as you speak to them more and more, like I know mediums, they have different ways to communicate with them, symbols and things that, you know, are symbolic of the communication of what they're trying to say. Do you find the more and more you speak to them, the more you're able to understand them?
Oh yeah, absolutely. So, and one of the things that's interesting about our group is that we're an all female team. And so for us, it's a little bit different, I think, because we go in with a natural sense of empathy.
Yes.
And I'm not to say that we're empathic per se, but you know, I think females have a just innate sense of empathy. So we really try to connect with the spirits on a more personal level. You know, we go in with the theory that the entities that we're trying to communicate with had a human existence. They're born, they lived, they died, and for some reason they're staying in this location. So we go in with that approach and we want to talk to them on that level. One of the things that we also use in our investigations is what we call trigger items. So it's an attempt to take an item or a piece of music or something that would evoke a response from a spirit based on the location. So for example, when we investigated Fort Mifflin in Philadelphia, that's a Revolutionary War fort that had a small underground room called a casemate, and it was used as solitary confinement. So we asked ourselves, what would somebody in solitary confinement want? They'd probably want water. They'd probably want food. And we just left them a cigarette as well. And so when we did that, we said, this is for you. We acknowledge that you are here and we want to leave this for you. And if you want to communicate with us, we'd appreciate that. So one of the instances we went down into that casemate that night, there was just two of us, myself and my investigator, Cara. And I said, we left you some water and we left you a cigarette. And we got a response of thank you. It was a male voice that said, thank you. We both heard it in the moment. There was nobody else in the room with us. This is an underground room. And so we knew we had control of the environment, yet we captured this male voice saying thank you. And I think that was him acknowledging that we were respectful of what he went through.
So there's a lot of thought that goes into these investigations and a lot of prep.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So we do a lot of advanced research. You know, we want to know the stories behind it. And that leads us to, again, creating trigger items, as well as getting interview questions or, you know, what we call EVP session questions. And that really allows us to formulate those so we can have that one-on-one connection. And then we'll conduct the investigation. And then if we need any more research after that, then we'll go to archives and National Archives and Chamber of Commerce and all of that to see if we can get more information about the location. So for us, it's a continual research project, if you will, each one of these locations that we go to.
I saw in the video I watched you're using a spirit box. Can you tell us a little bit more about that? And what are some of your most favorite equipment and tools to use in your investigations?
Okay. So the spirit box is, generally speaking, it's an AM/FM radio that's been modified to very quickly sweep through AM and FM frequencies.
Okay.
So when you turn it on, you just hear as it's going through these frequencies. So the idea is that spirits can use the white noise to communicate with us. So if I'm in a room and I'm asking a question and a word comes through there, it could be germane to the environment that we're in. Okay. So for example, we were at the Ma Barker house and we turned on this on our spirit box, and it's a very small radio. It's handheld, right? It doesn't have a large range to pick up radio frequencies. And so the location that we were in at that time, it's on 40 acres by itself in the middle of nowhere. So there was no radio frequencies that were really picking up. So I asked the question, what happened in this room? And we got the phrase, they murdered us, we the ones dead. Now, wow. These frequencies are changing at about an eighth of a second. So there's no way possibly that a phrase could come through, yet it's coming through the white noise. And so that to us is extremely compelling because I can't explain that. I asked another question. I said, can you say the name Blackburn? And Blackburn was the alias that they rented the house under. And I said, can you say the name Blackburn? And through the radio came Blackburn, which the odds of a radio station saying the name Blackburn when I've asked it to is astronomical, those odds. And yeah. So for us, it's very compelling that the spirits can use this type of communication with us. Some other equipment that we use really try to pick up energy. So we believe that spirits are made up of energy because energy cannot be created or destroyed. And so we have various tools that are designed to measure energy, something called the K2 meter. This is something that if you're in a room and you know there's no power in the room or any type of power source, electrical source, this thing should not go off. It should always be in really the low power mode. But yet when you start asking questions and something acts on it and these energy levels spike, that to us is very compelling because it's saying that something is acting on this. Absent of any electricity in the room, something is causing this thing to spike. Right. So we use K2 meters. We use another device called a REM pod, which is also a proximity meter designed to measure electromagnetic energy, but it has an audible alarm as well as a light array. Depending on how close or how strong the energy is, the alarm will go off or the light array will light up to that extent. We have a device called an EDI box, which it also has a proximity meter. It also has a temperature gauge. It has a pressure change. So if there's any pressure change in the room, it also has a geophone. So where if there's any vibration or anything touches it, it will alarm and let you know that something's touching it. And voice recorders, we use a lot of voice recorders because to us, disembodied voices are one of the most interesting things that we capture because those are the hardest for me to debunk. Again, if I'm in a room and there's two females and yet I have a male voice talking to us, I can't debunk that. But, you know, there are other things, you know, that act upon that as well. So voice recorders are very important. We have night vision video cameras. We all wear body cameras. So we have a timestamp of where everybody is on the property at a location. So that's very important because we want to make sure we know where we all are. So if we capture something, I can look back at those timestamps and say, yeah, that was one of us, or no, that wasn't one of us. Let's look at this further. And yeah, that pretty much kind of rounds out some of our equipment.
Have you worked with authorities at all on murder investigations? Like, is that something that?
No, we haven't. I would be fascinated to do that. Now, right? We've gone to murder houses where the murders have been unsolved, which is kind of interesting. But we've never worked with law enforcement or anything like that.
Well, they're losing out.
It'd be a fun experience. I would actually love to do that. You know, it's just because some of the answers that we get to some of our investigations are pretty compelling.
So that was going to be my question. So after doing this for almost close to a decade, is there anything that still shocks you, or what stands out in the sense of was the most shocking moment ever?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, every time we go to a location and something happens, you have that moment of, wow, that really just happened. I mean, every time you hear a disembodied voice or you hear something speaking or you hear a door slam or see something move, it's still exhilarating to us. You know, it really gets the adrenaline going. I can probably say one of the most interesting EVPs that we captured, and EVP stands for electronic voice phenomena. So these are voices that we pick up on some of our equipment. Sometimes we hear them audibly in the moment and sometimes we don't, and just the voice recorder will pick them up. So I'd say the one that was the most compelling, we were investigating the Grand Old Lady Hotel in Balsam, North Carolina. And this hotel was built in 1905.
Sounds fun.
It was beautiful. It's part of the railway system. It's a 3-story hotel. It has 100 guest rooms, a large ballroom, a solarium type kitchen, which is gorgeous, great sweeping staircases. So during, it was in its heyday, was the early 1900s up until the 1930s. And then it really started going into a decline after the Great Depression. So it was used for various things after that. And then it sat abandoned for decades. And so then the current owner, she allowed paranormal investigators to come in, and she really tried to bring it back to the grandeur that it was in the early 1900s. So when we investigated there, it was myself, my twin sister, Jenny, and a friend of ours, Miranda Young from Ghost Biker Explorations. She's another paranormal investigator. So it was just the three of us. We were the only people in the building for a weekend. We had complete control of the environment. So we had access to, we were the only, like I said, the only people. We had access to everything, and we knew that we were the only three people there. We investigated on Friday and Saturday night and came up with very compelling pieces of evidence. For example, we were in the kitchen at about 2:30 in the morning on Saturday. And I asked the question, will you please just let us know that you're here? And the coffee pot turns on. Now, there's no reason this coffee pot should turn on. It's not on a timer. It's in the off season. So there's no reason why it should be set on a timer if it was, but the coffee pot turns on. There was another instance where I said, you know, you really need to let us know that something's here, and a table overturned. So that was kind of interesting. But the most compelling piece of evidence that weekend was the three of us decided to stay in a 2-bedroom suite upstairs on the 3rd floor, adjacent to a hallway called Henry's Hallway, which is reported to be the most active hallway in the building. And so the way the room is configured, there's an interior room that had some queen beds and an exterior room that had a double bed. And that exterior room was the only way to get into the hallway. So, and Miranda slept in that room. Jenny and I slept in the interior room. And so we had the door shut, and we had a night vision video camera on the outside of the hall, in the hallway outside of the door, and a night vision video camera inside the room. So we knew that we had control of that environment. We could see, you know, anything that happened. And so you hear us say goodnight. We said, you know, goodnight and all that other stuff. And about 15 minutes later, a male's voice outside the door said, please don't go. It was very loud. Everything that we had recording captured it. We all heard it in the moment. And Miranda said, did y'all hear that? And I said, yeah. And she said, what was that? And I said, there's a man standing outside our door. And she said, yeah, that's what I thought. And so that to me was one of the most intense EVPs. I mean, we hear different things in the moment sometimes, but this was so loud, so booming. I mean, we probably could have heard it 6 rooms down. That's how loud this voice was. And to me, that was the one that really was like, okay, that's pretty cool.
Do you ever get scared?
Absolutely. I mean, there are times where you have these moments of trepidation, but for us, it's more of an adrenaline rush.
Yeah.
I mean, I can honestly say we've never run out of a building screaming. We've never, you know, said, let's get out of here and never return. And to us, it's really one of those exploration moments where we want to find out what caused it. We want to get more answers. We want to ask follow-up questions to see if we can get more responses.
Do you ever feel that you've brought a spirit with you out of a location, or they've
no, not
feel
so much
presence outside the locations?
Not so much from a location. When we go into a location, we right before we start or right before we go in, we do say a prayer protection. And then when we go into the location, we really set our expectations. And by that, I mean, we say, you are not allowed to harm us. You are not allowed to physically assault us in any way. And you're not allowed to come home with us. We're here to tell your story, and we're here to communicate with you. Other than that, you are not allowed to ever physically touch us unless we give you permission to do so. So for example, if I say you can touch my hand or you can pull my pant leg, that's different. I'm inviting them to do that. But we always say, and then at the end of the investigation, we always close it by saying, you must stay here. Thank you for communicating with us. Thank you for telling us our story, but you're not allowed to come home with us. And I think because of that, we've set those boundaries. I think we've gotten the respect from the spirits for doing that. And, you know, we've never been harmed physically. We've never felt anything malicious or demonic or evil acting on us or anything like that. It's always been more of a, almost like a give and take communication, like I'm talking to you. And then it's a thank you for communicating with us, and we leave.
Super powerful. There's something that was on your website that I want to just lean into a little bit. So it says that a personal impact of these indications have led for a stronger belief in the afterlife, a more peaceful outlook on what happens once we transition from this world. And of course, that's, I think, you know, everyone's fear in the sense of what happens after we pass and transition from this physical world that we're in. obviously a lot of people have different belief systems, and a deeper connection to this world and your time here. Can you just expand on that? Because it's all super powerful. And I think a lot of people really appreciate your perspective of that mm-hmm. and find peace in that.
Well, and thank you for pointing that out. You know, for us, and I will say I'm a Christian. I have a belief that there is an afterlife, and that afterlife for me is heaven. But I also believe that there are some instances where spirits won't ascend immediately, that for some reason they're allowed to communicate with us. Okay. And one of those primary reasons is they do have unfinished business. And I know we hear that a lot in popular television shows and such, but I do believe that's the case. And so for an example, my Nana and granddaddy, they lived in Florida, and my granddaddy died in 1986. And I was extremely close with my Nana, my grandmother, extremely close with my Nana. And so I'm actually named after her. And so she and I had this really interesting relationship. We were really close. And in 2016, I had this very vivid dream, and it actually happened 3 nights in a row. And granddaddy came to me, and the first 2 nights, he came to me, he made this sound, and then he disappeared. And so I was telling my mom, I said, you know, I had for 2 nights, I've had this dream about granddaddy. It's so vivid. Like, I can tell you how he smelled, where he was standing, you know, what he was wearing. And she just kind of off the cuff said, well, just ask him what he wants. And so the third night, he came to me in this dream again, and I said, granddaddy, what do you want? And he looks at me and he said, I'm waiting on your Nana. You're going to be getting a call soon. Well, about 2 weeks after that, my Nana was in an accident and she broke her hip pretty badly. And when they did the surgery, she ended up developing MRSA, and she never really recovered from that. So she went into hospice, and after she passed in hospice, about 3 hours after she passed, I looked at my sister and I said, I know where she's going. She's going to go meet up with granddaddy in the spot that was depicted in this dream, which was in the house. And so I asked my family, I said, I want to do this. Will you guys allow me to do this? And they said, sure, go. And so we took our K2 meters that I had mentioned previously, and we went to the spot in the house that was depicted in this dream. It was right outside of his office, his home office door. And so we had these two K2 meters. One was black and one was gray. And I said, Nana, are you here? And both of those K2 meters started going off like crazy. And they're only about 3 feet apart from each other. Jenny's holding one and I'm holding one. And I said, okay, stop, back up. And it stopped. And I said, if you're here, just to confirm, just go to the black meter. And the black meter lit up, the gray did nothing. And I said, one more time, stop on the black and just go to the gray. Gray meter just lit up. Black was dormant. And so I said, is granddaddy with you? Everything lit up. And so then we started asking questions to granddaddy. And so in my mind, and I'm very confident that we had communicated with Nana and granddaddy, and that they ascended after that, because we went back a week after, did the exact same experiment with the exact same tools, and did not get any response. And so for me, granddaddy's unfinished business was he was waiting on Nana. Yeah. But now that they've moved on, I don't consider them spirits or ghosts anymore. So I'm not going to try to communicate with them. And so for me, that was extremely peaceful, because I was crushed when Nana died. But now my understanding is that you have somebody that is going to meet up with you, that you're not going to make this transition alone. And that to me is extremely peaceful. And that they're not spirits anymore or ghosts per se, that's very peaceful, because again, it allows me to believe that they've moved on to what's next and they're okay with that. They were okay. And that's really what my takeaway is from all of this. You know, every time we get to communicate with a spirit, we get to tell their story, and that's what we really want to do. And it obviously leads me to believe that there's something after this, that you're not just going to close your eyes and that's going to be it.
I love that. For a couple of things that I want to point out. One, I think, you know, for a lot of people, when their loved ones pass, the worry is, you know, we say, well, they've gone to be with their spouse or somebody, friends and family that have passed. But I think it's one thing to say it, but it's another thing to actually believe it, right? Mm-hmm. And the second piece, I had actually gone to see Teresa Caputo in person. And, you know, it was like a huge room, huge crowd. And I would say the huge percentage of people, all they wanted to know mm-hmm. was that they transitioned, they're at peace, and you know, they weren't in pain, whatever the cause of death was. And they just, you know, they feel at peace, essentially. Mm-hmm. So I think that would give a lot of people mm-hmm. a lot of grace.
That's what my experience has been with this. Now, again, the spirits that we're speaking with on obviously have not transitioned over, but I think it's because they still have a story to tell or some action needs to be fulfilled, whether their crime needs to be solved as to why they were killed or, you know, for example, the Villisca Axe Murder House, which is out in Villisca, Iowa. This is where a family of eight was killed by an unknown assailant in 1912. Two adults and six kids were bludgeoned to death with an axe. And so I think their unfinished business is somebody has to figure out who their killer was, you know, or that's what they really need in order to move on peacefully. They want that solved. They want that finished. And so those are the type of individuals or spirits that we're communicating with, those that still have a story to tell, or for some reason they can't find that way to get to the next level.
So you're almost giving them that gift as well.
We're trying to. Yeah, that's exactly what we're trying to do, is to really tell their story and to say, you know, it's okay. You can move on. We're going to tell your story for you.
Wow, I love that. So does it make you want to live harder with your time here, or live differently, or live more, or, you know, we always say this isn't a dress rehearsal per se.
You're right. No, it's not a dress rehearsal. And, you know, for me, it really has become this interesting journey. Honest to God, I've never thought that I would be here in a museum in Tennessee as a paranormal investigator running a paranormal research center. That's not what my life goal was, but it is the path that has allowed me to be happy. And I think that's what people really need to understand in life. You've got to find that passion that makes you happy, whether it be a paranormal investigator or an artist or an entertainer or a construction worker, whatever makes you happy. You've got to find that passion, because to your point, this isn't a dress rehearsal. And for me, you know, the path of paranormal investigation is one that is fascinating. I get to travel. I get to, you know, do these very unique investigations with my best friends who are my sisters. I get to have a very tactile experience with these historic locations. I mean, not many people can say that they've stayed the night in penitentiaries or the St. Augustine Lighthouse or axe murder houses, but I've done that, right? I get to see these locations and experience that firsthand. And then I've met some amazing people along the way. You know, my best friend and business partner, Miranda, we met through the paranormal. A lot of people in the paranormal community have become very close friends. And it's just this really interesting path that if you would ask me 20 years ago, will you be in rural Tennessee? I would say absolutely not. But it's something that to me is, I love it.
I'm sure it's a lot more exciting than working a 9-to-5 office job.
It is. And it always keeps you guessing, let me tell you.
So the locations that you're not asked to go into, the ones that you seek out, they always give you access to it?
Yeah, for the most part. Yeah, they either give us access to it, or that's part of their revenue stream where they allow people to come in and do this.
Okay.
For example, when we investigated the USS North Carolina, that is something that they do. They allow you to essentially rent the ship and you can go in and do these investigations.
So go back to the beginning. Predominantly, you are in the U.S. Do you have any plans to expand into other countries and other locations outside of the U.S.?
Absolutely. That is my bucket list, to go to some international locations. In fact, just before the pandemic, we were scheduled to go to London, over into England, and do some investigations. But obviously that got nixed. But so yes, absolutely. So I'd love to get to England. I'd love to get to Australia. I've traveled some to Canada, up in Banff. I've been up there, and I would love to investigate that hotel and do some different things up there as well. So
you must watch TV and movies, and everything's a trigger in the sense of, I would love to go there, right? And investigate
that. Oh yeah. But you know, but here in the US and other parts of the country or the world as well, if we can find those smaller little locations that people really don't know about, that's what we love to do as well. So for example, going back to the Ma Barker house, you know, this was a location that in 1935 had the national spotlight on it, right? J. Edgar Hoover was in this small one horse town in central Florida because they had just killed the two members of the Barker Carpus gang. And yet nobody in this community knew the significance of this house. So when we produced the documentary about it and our paranormal findings, we had people coming up to us saying, I never knew that happened here. I never knew the story behind that house. You know, and people were, you know, we had newspaper articles and magazine articles writing about us because we had told this grand story, that really had just got lost in the annals of time. And to be able to bring that back to the forefront of the conversation, especially in these local communities, because now you can do so many things with that. You know, you can save the history of the house. You can ask for donations. You can start doing tours, which increases historic preservation. So that's what we really love to do, to really jumpstart that conversation and say, hey, this exists, right? This house is here. These are some interesting things that happened here. These events that took place, historically speaking, now let's save it. Let's preserve it. And let's get people in to enjoy that and reconnect with this. And I mean, that to us is really why we're doing this.
So someone's going to listen to this and, you know, they either have an interest or are being called to learn more about how to, for themselves to get into the paranormal investigation community. What would be your advice to them?
Really, the first thing is to understand that if you're going to become a paranormal investigator, you have to do it for the right intentions. And by that, I mean, you have to go in with the mindset of respect for the location and respect for the spirits you're attempting to communicate with. As I said before, we don't do this to get a jump scare on a Friday night. That's not what this is about. We have immersed ourselves into this. Everything that we do is self-funded. You have to realize that this is an expensive hobby, but we do it because we love what we're doing and we feel that we have our purpose for doing this. So those are the reasons why you should get into this. Not so much just thinking you're going to get a television show, because let me tell you, it's not going to happen. You know,
maybe after this.
maybe you never know. But it's just one of those things that you really have to believe in it and respect, again, the nature of what you're doing it for. And the other thing is to really have patience. You know, we've gone to locations where we've sat for 12, 18, 24 hours, and we haven't got anything that we would consider paranormal. And that's fine, because you're still sitting for 12, 18, 24 hours in this location that's amazing. And so you have to understand that it's not every time you ask a question, you're going to get a response. You know, for example, we'll go to a location and I've got 10 voice recorders and they're running for 10 hours. I'm sitting there and I'm listening to 100 hours of audio after we're done with that investigation. And I may capture 2 or 3 EVPs in that 100 hours of audio. But for me, that's an adrenaline rush, right? To know that we've captured something, a disembodied voice that you can't really explain it. So you have to have patience when you do this. Absolutely.
I think what people are going to be most surprised about when they, because you film your investigations, is just, it's back to your point in the sense of how you're empathetic and how you treat the spirits like they're still in the presence tense. So I thought that was really cool. I always end my podcast episodes with asking the guests if they're feeling called to share anything that we may not have spoken about, or you're just intuitively being called to share.
You know, again, for me, if we're talking about paranormal investigations, it really is something that all belief structures, all religions, we're all going to die, right? No matter what you believe. But it's that sense of exploration, right? The sense of asking the questions that we really need to be excited about. And so for me, if you're thinking about going into paranormal investigations, you know, don't think that you're going to be hamstrung by a belief system or a structure that is against it. Because for me, a lot of people say, you know, you're a Christian, how can you do this? But for me, it is one of those things where it has actually strengthened my religious beliefs. It has strengthened my belief in the afterlife and has made me a stronger person. And so I think that in the terms of paranormal investigations, that's what some people really don't take into account when they're looking at a popular television show or a popular movie that is based around paranormal investigations.
Do you think, or do you feel that it has really allowed you to find peace in the notion that we're all going to pass?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. You know, and like I said, it allows me to have that stronger belief system that something does happen after this. You know, I've known some people that say that when you die, you just close your eyes and you cease to be. And for me, that would actually be terrifying. But I know that things go on after this. I know that we ascend to whatever's next. And that to me absolutely gives me peace. It allows me to be less fearful of what's coming next.
I love that. And I think you're going to give that peace to everyone that's going to listen to this. Let us know where people could find you, the services that you offer.
So the website is www.soulsistersparanormal.com. Anything you want to know about us, you can find there. The locations that we've gone to, our appearances, that's all on the website. And then we're very active on Facebook under Soul Sisters Paranormal. We also have an Instagram account under Soul Sisters Paranormal. And then our YouTube channel is Soul Sisters Paranormal.
People are going to love it because, like I said, your videos, the footage that you have is detailed, and anybody that just loves history and to learn about various locations will, in itself, if that's all they took from the actual footage, I think, you know, they'll get what they went for. In terms of services, let's say somebody's listening and they, you know, have a location that they'd be interested for you guys to come out to.
Yeah. So our contact information is on the website. And, you know, we love to get to as many locations as we can. It is a logistical situation for us as well, because we do have other full-time jobs.
Yeah.
But if we can get it planned a little bit in advance, absolutely. We love to visit different locations. We have done private investigations at homes and businesses as well. Again, it just depends on logistics. For example, we had somebody in Haiti that called and said, will you please come down here? Unfortunately, that didn't happen. We couldn't do that. But we have a community of, I have a community of people around the world that I can contact and say, hey, this individual is having this issue. Is there any way that you can get to that location? So if you have any, if you want to reach out or just send a message, that's awesome as well.
So I'm sensing lots of expansion, lots of growth.
Absolutely.
In 2023. Thank you so much. This is such an incredible conversation that I know people are going to take so much from it. So thank you so much.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
We hope you've enjoyed that episode of the Laura Sanso podcast. Thank you to our guests. To stay connected to host Laura Sanso, follow her at I Am Laura Sanso or at the Laura Sanso podcast on Instagram. To learn more about Laura, go to www.laurasanso.com.